Hi, I'm Cormac.
And I'm Josh.
Welcome to The Living Project.
Be true, live wild.
Hello and welcome. Thanks for being with us today. In this episode, Josh and I are joined by our ordinarily inspired friend, Deb Cook.
The aim of these interviews is to shine a light on the universal human journey and the epicness of everyday life. Today's episode is a conversation with Deb Cook, a lifelong water woman and mum to three small heroes living wild in Wales with her soulmate Bob and their dog Benny. The values she lives by and her approach to life are generous, loving and inextricably bound up with adventure, the wild, particularly water and rivers as we'll come to, and connecting with other humans. We're looking forward to finding out more and sharing her story with you.
Hi Debs, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I'm living a bit of an ideal life at the moment, I think. Just enjoying some magical extra time with my boys and more time at home than I'm ever used to, which is fantastic. It's obviously got some sad undertones in it because behind the scenes and far away from us, there's a lot going on for a lot of other people with the COVID-19. But for me, it feels like a bit of a gift at the moment because we've got all this extra time on our hands. So I'm just gone through all the different waves of emotions that I think lots of other people have, but I've just come to enjoy it now. So I'm feeling probably like more relaxed and more content at home than I have done in a long time, which is fantastic.
We normally meet on kind of windswept beaches or cold rivers in North Wales. So it's really nice to have the opportunity to chat in the safety of our nice warm houses at the moment. So it certainly makes a difference.
Yeah, you say houses. Obviously, I'm on a boat, but it's, you know, it's equally warm and cosy and lovely. But as you know, at The Living Project, we work closely with four elements of the wild: water, earth, fire and air. And I'm just wondering which one of these elements resonates with you the most and why.
Well, I guess I would have to say water because it's probably been the environment in which most of my memorable experiences or adventures have taken place, or it's certainly been involved in that. So I would certainly say water. I think if I could say wild as well as water, I probably would, because I think the two of them, for me, it's probably where I'm happiest. If I'm on water and it feels wild, not necessarily epic or, you know, really gnarly, but just in a wild space, then I think I would be really happy. So I would have to say water. It's definitely places where, you know, from being young and on the beach and messing about in boats to some great big expeditions and things like that, it's definitely where some of my longest lasting memories have taken place.
Great. Well, we'll start with water then. So it's one of our core elements, as we just described, and it's reflective. And when we choose to listen, it reminds us of our journey, who we are, and it calls us to account. So let's talk a little bit about how you got to where you are today. You describe your childhood and your teenage years as full of magic and freedom. What stands out for you about this period, and how did those years influence who you are today?
I think my childhood was just happy, I think is the way I would describe it. There was nothing majorly traumatic about it, or, you know, nothing that extreme about it, but it was just happy. I was really fortunate. I had an amazing mum and dad that just gave us loads of opportunities to do loads of cool things, not from a, you know, spending loads of money kind of point of view, but just took us places and did things and gave us lots of opportunities. So when we were young, they were both teachers, so that meant that we all had these magical long summer holidays, which we would just pack the car and go and camp in France and just live wild on a campsite, but, you know, just, you know, every day going to the sea and just hanging out and having those magical long holidays, which I just remember. And I think I was really fortunate to grow up in a time where we weren't so bound by regulations and health and safety, and it was easier to give young people responsibility. So from quite an early age, I was working with young people myself and, you know, helping out on camps or going on some of the school trips that my parents would have organised and things like that. And so I think I just feel like I had a really lucky period that I grew up in, where we just got given the opportunity to do stuff and given some real responsibility, which I think it's a bit harder to do nowadays. And I think it just teaches you some, you know, real lessons about you have to work and to get things done, a bit of a work ethic and a bit of resilience because you've got long journeys to get through, or sanding your sandwiches for 10 days in a row, or just looking after yourself in the outdoors. And I think it taught me lots of little things like that, but just in general, I guess, just a love for the outdoors and the fact that I really loved being outside and also loved being with people. I think my childhood was very much surrounded by lots of other families with kids our age and things like that. So you end up always being around people, and that's what made it fun as well.
Yeah, magic. So we move then from your childhood of living wild with your parents and heading out on kayaks and adventuring with other families, and you graduate Glasgow University and you set your sights on a women's white water rafting team. And I guess, yeah, our next question is, how did that feel to set your sights on that and go after it? And then what did it lead to? And what else did you learn about yourself from all those things that it led to?
It's funny, like when you say it like that, set my sights, it kind of happened by mistake. I was working at a white water centre after I'd graduated, and I just heard about these girls that were going off to the Zambezi and they were competing in white water rafting for Great Britain. And I was like, well, how come? What makes them the British team? And I was a little bit indignant. And I was just young and too confident and thought I was better than I was, I think. And so my boss at the time, he was quite involved in it as well. And he was like, well, we just got the invite and we go and we do this thing. And I was like, oh, well, what happens if I want to be the British team? And he kind of was like, oh. And I don't think he'd really thought about that. And he said, well, I guess you'd have to challenge the current team, Deb. And I was like, right, well, I will then. And that's what I did. And I think, I don't know what fired me up so much about it. I think I was just really looking for adventure. And I was working at a white water centre in the Midlands, and that wasn't really doing it for me. So I guess I saw an opportunity and gathered a bunch of girls and organised a competition and challenged this, you know, the current team, and we lost. So it wasn't the hero story, I guess. We only lost by a small margin, but we did lose. But anyway, I was going off then to work as a raft guide in Austria. So I was heading off for the summer, and that was that. And it had been a great, you know, it had been a great experience to go through all that, and I'd learnt loads. But when I arrived in Austria, I realised that I was working with one of the girls that was on the team, and it turned out that one of their teammates couldn't go that year, and all of a sudden I was in the right place at the right time, and I got asked to join the team. So I was a bit of a defector, to be honest, because I then jumped ship and went and joined the original team. But it was kind of before even email existed or anything. I remember having to write a letter to my teammates back in England saying, I hope you don't mind, but this has happened. I was just in the right place at the right time. So off I went to Costa Rica to this competition in 98. And it was the biggest, most epic white water I'd ever seen. And I had some of the biggest swims of my life in training, and I just had eyes on storks the entire time. But I just had the time of my life. I mean, I've been to lots of competitions since then, and when you reflect back, it's the first one's always the best, because it's just the unknown. It's a bit like when you lead your first expedition or you do your first big thing. It's like that. It's that first one that's so memorable. But those girls that I raced with were just awesome, and they were just this group of women that they'd been competing on the Zambezi for the last however many years, and they were just kick-ass women that just got there and got in these boats and just were so strong and confident, and it was just amazing to be with them and around them. And but we had such a laugh doing it, and you know, there was me kind of like trying to keep up with these awesome river women, and trying not to show how epically scared I was in some of the huge rapids. But it was brilliant, and I learned so much, because I think until then, any of the bigger paddling I'd done, I'd always been either the only female on the river or one of very few. So it was probably the first time I'd ever been on such big white water and just had to look after myself, and knowing that we were all in it together and we were all looking out for each other, but there wasn't Bob in his kayak behind me or one of my mates from uni just showing me the line. It was like, no, we're just doing this by ourselves, and I don't want to make a big thing out of that, because I don't consider myself different being female or anything, but I think it was a real cool time for me to realize, like, yeah, we can just do this, and we are doing it, and they're doing it all the time. And the other women's teams we were competing against were brilliant. And so it taught me loads that if you just want to do something, you just have to just get on with it and just be a bit brave sometimes. And from then, I then went on to compete again and again. And really, that was the last time that team competed together. So I felt even more lucky that I'd been part of their last competition, because after that, they handed me the baton, really, and said, there you go, take the team if you want to take it, because we're not going to race anymore. So we did, and we raced that, you know, we raced in a new team for a couple of years, and then I went off travelling and working and all the rest of it. But I bumped into a guy in Ecuador in a bar randomly on an expedition who happened to have been at that first competition I was at, and we recognised each other, and he said to me, we're hosting the Rafting Worlds in Ecuador next year. You need to get a British team here. Come on, we need GB back. And I was like, yes, we do. So that was it. I arrived back in Britain after that expedition, and I was like, right, I need to find a group of girls, and we need to find a group of guys, and we need to build a team. We're going to go to Ecuador. And I was really lucky. I found other people that had a bit of passion and energy about it, and they were like, yeah, well, let's do this. And so, yeah, I think it, all of that rafting and the competition, what do I learn from it? I love being part of a team, basically. I love being part of another group of people that we're all working to do something together. And I love being part of a bigger community. So, like, rafting has been my community for a long time, as well as just rivers and paddling. But it's something that I've just had so many good times and met so many good people from all over the world. And you kind of, you're part of this big family that, you know, most of the time have the same kind of values and beliefs, that you just are on the river and enjoying it and putting yourself against it and competing as well. I think just, so yeah, lots of things.
Yeah, Debs, thanks very much. That's very inspiring. It sounds to me that all that time you spent on the water, both as a child and as an adult, has definitely given you some real insight into what makes you tick. You're also very humble. I think you've shown huge amounts of determination and commitment, and actually a little healthy dose of competitiveness in there to actually be able to get on and achieve those things. It was quite insightful to me that you kind of felt that you somehow got involved with this women's rafting team. Somehow they were amazing, but you were just there sort of by accident. But clearly they must have seen you as amazing, and to accept you as part of their team, they must have truly acknowledged that you were equal to them. And I think the fact they handed the baton over to you was awesome.
Yeah, I love some of the stories, Deb, that you have about rivers. So yeah, it's clearly been a cool part, and lovely to hear how important a concept of team and connection is. So moving on from water, Earth is the second of the Living Project's core elements. It's where we ground ourselves, find security, and determine our beliefs and feel able to set forth into the world from. So I'd love to get a little more into your relationship with the wild, particularly North Wales, where you are now, and what you love about North Wales, and what in general in life, you know, around that base that you have, what in general in life gives you your grounding?
I mean, North Wales for me is just, it's a great place where you can get a bit of everything. You know, we've got the coast, and we've got rivers, we've got mountains, lakes, forests. So there's so much to do here. if you like the outdoors. There's so many different environments you can go and be in. And I think, even, you know, in this lockdown, just in our little valley where we can just walk to places with our boys, we're one day we're up in a slate quarry scrambling around on rocks, and another day we're in a little gorge that's walkable from the house, and then the next day we're up in a forest looking at all the moss and playing with dinosaurs, which is generally what we'd play with every day at the moment. And it's just all these different little environments that you can be in. I think North Wales is quite a condensed version of somewhere like Scotland, which I've got a huge love for as well. And so it's increasingly harder sometimes to feel like you are in the wild, but at the moment you can because it's so quiet, because there's not so many people here. But it is a beautiful place to be, and it's a beautiful place to be as a family and bring people up and have friends to be here. And I think, you know, myself and Bob, we've been really lucky. We've lived in different places around the country and around the world, and we've done a lot of travelling. And when that's your life, you end up with friends dotted far and wide, really, where you've got really good friends in Scotland and the Lake District and London and the Southwest. And there's just everybody. But we're lucky that we've got some really good friends in this area as well. So it feels like when we moved to North Wales, it was kind of coming to people that we already knew. We had some really core people here that we could share adventures with. And then that's now grown since having a family. So I guess that's a little bit about why I love North Wales. And it is a special place. Wild places in general, I think, I just love that ability to step away from the normal bit of life where everything, you just seem to have to make so many decisions every day that get in the way of just having just simple fun. Whereas when you're away in a wild place and you're on a little expedition or a little adventure, then it's just usually about what's going to be for the next meal, or what's going to be the next rapid you run, or where shall we take the boat next. And I think for me, the connection into the wild is just stripping things back and just getting back to bare bones and simplicity. And I've been lucky that I've been able to do that in a few places around the world, but I've also been really lucky to share expeditions with some people who are really good at that, who are really good at just being in the moment. And I think when you spend time with people like that, it teaches you a lot about how you need to forget sometimes about all of those things that make your life busy, and you can just concentrate on the important stuff.
In terms of the grounding, you know, is it the mountains? Is it your family? Is it the wild? All those elements you were just talking about. Is that what makes you feel grounded where you are? Because you've been in North Wales for quite a while now.
I don't know. I think, like, for me to feel grounded, I don't need that much. As long as Bob's there, and now as long as the boy's there, I feel grounded. It doesn't matter whether I'm in my house in North Wales or on a little road trip somewhere or on a campsite anywhere. I think for me, it's not a particular place or a thing like a mountain. It's just having my pack, I guess. Having my pack around me makes me feel really grounded. And so although, you know, I spoke about being on that river with those women and we were just, you know, it was really liberating. But actually, you know, being on a river just with me and Bob is probably one of my favourite things to do. Or being out, just the five of us, or six with Benny the dog, you know, just on a little mini adventure, that's when I feel at my happiest, I guess.
Yeah, and that comes through in most things you talk about. And, you know, you know, you've been really clear that you've mentioned Bob a few times, and Bob seems like this soulmate that you've shared so many adventures with. And you've got these three boys that, you know, that are just, you know, integrated into this life commitment that you seem to have subconsciously made about how you want to be in the world, and taking them off in vans around Scotland and stuff like that. It's just amazing. And you can clearly see that, you know, in that, you know, in the different things that you've done, that those, you know, that those c- commitments, those values, the beliefs that ground you, that you know, even in the hard times when it's all stressful, and I imagine, you know, three boys and a life in the wild and it's pissing down with rain for 5 days in a row, it can get a bit much, but the way that you choose to live, you know, runs through that, regardless of whether it's shiny or shit. And I think that's really, really, really magic. So thanks for sharing that, Deb.
Deb, so we're going to move on to our third core element, which is fire. For us, fire represents the alchemy. It's where things really happen. It's where we ignite change and we burn away the old, and the past is redundant. So in your everyday epic connection to water, it must mean that you have a lot of fire, because you certainly need a lot of water to put that fire out. But hopefully when that fire is really burning, it really kind of helps you ignite your dreams. And you told me that if you want something, you just have to make it happen. Is this one of your life's mantras?
Wow. I don't know if I'm organised to have a life mantra. Organised enough, I think. A lot of what's happened in my life, I feel like it's just kind of landed on my lap. You just move from one thing to the next. Oh, that sounds good. We'll do that next. And I don't feel like my life has been planned or organised in any way. But if you really want something, you do have to make it happen. And if something's not going right, then I think the first thing you really have to do is look at yourself and go, well, what haven't I done, or what aren't I doing? Because generally, if you do that, you can normally figure something out. Just if you want something, go and get it. Now, it's a bit cheesy, isn't it? And I know that there'll be some people thinking, well, it's all right, you know, I don't have these opportunities to go and do that. And I think I don't necessarily agree with some of these people that say, like, you can do anything you want to do, because it's not possible for everybody to do everything they want to do. But I think you do have to have a bit of a just a go and get it, or a positivity to just try and make things happen. And you have to choose the right people that allow you to do that. So that, like, surrounding yourself with the people that help you be the best you can be, if you like. And I'm really lucky. I did find somebody quite early on, and we have had an amazing time having adventures together. And I'm lucky that Bob does share a lot of my same values and beliefs, but he also is the solid rock that will make things happen sometimes. Well, I'm a bit like, oh, let's go do this. And he'll be the one that kind of just actually goes and creates whatever it is that we need to make, or packs the thing that we actually need to remember. Or So I think, yeah, is it my life's mantra? I don't know. But I think you just have to try and make things happen. And whatever comes your way, just try and make the best of whatever it is that's come your way at that time, rather than go, oh no, it's raining. Because if you live in North Wales, then actually you have to embrace the rain on a daily basis quite often. Not at the moment, but
yeah. Okay, I love that.
I don't know if I've answered the question there, sorry.
You have, like, it's part of you. Whatever you say is answering the question. It's all truth, unless it's bullshit. But what I like is that what's come across is, that humility of, a lot of things has just landed in my lap. And yet, 5 minutes ago, you were sharing a story about, you saw this GB team. You're like, well, how come they're the GB team? Right. Okay. Well, I'm going to go and be the GB team. So, while there's humility, the evidence lies in that you do make quite a lot of life happen, Deb. Moving on from that, and you've clearly made things happen, ignited some fire in you, you found and done that at different times in life. Air is the fourth of the living project's core elements. Deb, it represents the space where you can, with confidence, connect with others, demonstrate compassion, be your inner child, and actually live your truth, like send it out there and manifest it. You've created a family and a professional life in a remote part of North Wales. And we've touched on lots of special parts of that. What's important to you moving forwards?
I think I just want to continue to feel like we can give our boys as many opportunities as we can, so that they have, you know, in some ways, I don't want to replicate my childhood for them, but I want to make sure that they have a happy childhood and just can have fun and try as many things as they can and do as many things. So just keeping their their opportunities going. I like to continue enjoying the outdoors myself and like having those different passions for either different activities or different environments, and just sharing that with our boys as well. I think it's so important to show them that you know it's important to have a passion or an interest or something that helps you stay happy and fulfilled. And you know, sometimes they see me saying, I'm gonna have to go for a run now, boys, because I've spent too long playing dinosaurs. And I think that's good. You know, my parents never stopped doing what they did when we were young. We just kind of went along for the ride and it was fun. Whatever we did was fun. And hopefully there's a little bit of that with our boys, as well as some stuff for them thrown in, you know, uniquely as well. But I enjoy living in North Wales, but I don't necessarily think I'll be here forever. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. But at the moment, it's a great place for our family to be. But I'd like to, you know, I'm lucky that I've got in a, you know, I'm in a job at the moment where predominantly I have school holidays free. So as our boys grow up, that's going to be fantastic to have that time and space to do things with them and share their time. But whether that job will eventually change, who knows? At the moment, it's great. And maybe I'll move on to something different or something new. But so I think I don't have a master plan, as usual. So at the moment, we're very happy at where we are. But I think, you know, I think I'd also be disappointed if in 10 years' time I was in the same spot. Because I'd like to think that in 10 years' time, some more things will have happened and will have followed in a slightly different path. And whether that's just to a different area or a different job or just some new opportunities. But I can't tell you what they are right now. Haven't made them up yet.
Thanks, Debs. It's really been great talking to you and you sharing your story with us and with our community. What was really wonderful to hear at the end was, you know, in terms of your relationship with the element air, it's very much that for you, you know, you have gone from this whole focus about you and what you need in life, and it's very much shifted to your family and your boys, and you're definitely drawing on lots of those values and things that you'd learn in your own experience as a child, but going beyond those. And really get the whole idea that you're trying to make sure that your boys have opportunities and that they're happy enjoying their childhood. But also great to hear that whilst you're obviously doing some amazing things within your career and the work that you do helping people in the outdoors, that you've also got potentially some new dreams that might manifest in the future for you and your family, in terms of where you might go or the kind of things you might do. So we wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
We hope you've enjoyed today's episode with Debs. Deb's story clearly tells us that the universal human journey is different and yet similar for us all. We all make choices, yet the closer those choices are to our truth, the better we are to ourselves and those around us. The wild, namely the river, has been a big part of Deb's truth. What in the wild is a part of yours?
See you soon. Be true, live wild. You've been listening to The Living Project with Josh Bulpin and Cormac Davey.
Enjoyed it? Please subscribe, follow, rate, and share with everyone you know. See you next time.
Be true, live wild.